This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of June 2018. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. Texas Republicans hold their first convention since Donald Trump was elected president.
Republicans were conservatives. We conserve. We protect from destruction that which is true.
The Democrat running for Texas Lieutenant Governor.
Well, it's been 25 years since one of us won, but people are really unhappy.
And why is it illegal to jump in Lady Bird Lake?
Because it's so polluted.
There are probably rip currents.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend.
I want the community to know that these have not just been words over this past month and a half vetting process. And my commitment to each and every one of you is that I will attack each and every day with my driving force being making sure we're practicing the best policing for this community to ensure not only safety, but fair and equitable practices. So thank you again for your vote of confidence today. And I look forward to continuing to serve this great city.
That's Austin's new police chief, Brian Manley. He was confirmed this week, and as KUT's Trey Shaw reports, the vote was unanimous.
After nearly three decades with the Austin Police Department and more than a year and a half as interim chief, Manley now has the job in a more permanent capacity. City Manager Spencer Kronk named Manley the sole finalist for the position in April, saying at the time that he wanted to hear from the public before deciding whether to conduct a national search. Then last week, Kronk appointed Manley chief, pending a vote by the City Council.
My commitment to you is that I am going to do everything I can to show you that your trust in me was not misplaced today.
Manley said APD will be implementing a new policy that emphasizes de-escalation of potentially violent incidents and will be increasing officer training in that area and in handling situations involving people armed with weapons other than firearms. Trey Shaw, KUT News.
And there's also a change at the top of the Austin Fire Department. City Manager Kronk announced his appointment of Assistant Fire Chief Tom Dodds as Interim Fire Chief of the Austin Fire Department.
He's been a firefighter for more than three decades and served as chief of staff, and we have the ability to put him forward as my appointment for the interim fire chief. I know that he will be serving in that capacity and do an extraordinary job. So thank you in advance for your service. Appreciate that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's Chief Dodds there at the end. He takes on the role being vacated by Rhoda Mae Kerr. She's moving on to be the fire chief in Fort Lauderdale, where she started her career. Now, speaking of the fire department, the Austin City Council approved resolutions that would get the ball rolling on five new fire stations in areas faced with slow emergency response times. And as KUT's Dalia Jones reports, this will get them built sooner than had been planned.
The City Council cut a 10-year timeline in half for the construction of five fire stations in Travis County. A Del Valle station will be built within the next 2 years, and a Travis Country station will be constructed in the next three. Three other fire stations will be built in the Goodnight Ranch, Loop 360 Davenport, and Canyon Creek areas by 2023. The plan follows a 2016 study finding that Austin Fire Department response in those areas was over the national standard of 8 minutes. Councilmember Delia Garza acknowledged those response times meant higher insurance rates.
I'm very grateful that our staff has committed to this aggressive timeline to get permanent stations to these communities within 2 years. I firmly hope that that is 2 years from today, but we will be monitoring this.
The original proposal was to build temporary fire stations in the Del Valle and Travis Country areas until permanent stations could be built. Councilmember Garza says building permanent stations will take only 6 months longer. Dalia Jones, KUT News.
Okay, one more City Council story, but you're going to like this one if you're a homeowner. Because the City Council voted to increase the homestead exemption. It means a small tax break, about $20 a year for the owner of a median-priced home. Avery Miles reports.
City Council members voted for a 2% increase on the homestead exemption, bringing it up to 10%. District 8 Councilmember Ellen Troxclair has been working on this issue for the past 4 years.
There are a lot of programs that we have in place for renters, and there are some programs that we have in place for homeowners, and I hope this doesn't become a division between the two, because there are renters and homeowners across the city at a variety of different income levels who are all struggling.
Councilmember Delia Garza said she could not support something that could potentially take $5 million out of the general fund. Councilmember Greg Kassar moved to amend the exemption to a 9% increase, but the amendment failed. Troxclair hopes that the city of Austin will eventually have a homestead exemption of 20%. Avery Miles, KUT News.
Political party conventions are always about the future. The next election, to be specific, but also the 5 and 10 year plans to grow a party. KUT's Ben Philpott is at the Texas Republican Convention in San Antonio. He reports that despite the party's dominance over the last couple decades, concerns about cracks in the armor have the party fighting over how to fix them.
Now, wait a minute. You might be saying, what does cracks in the armor mean? Is it the fact that more Republicans voted than Democrats during the March primaries? Concern about weakness from Governor Greg Abbott's 20-point win in 2014? Right. At the ballot box, Texas Republicans are the Avengers at the end of the first Avengers movie, completely victorious.
And I'm proud to tell you that as we gather today, Texas is better than it was 4 years ago.
But despite the list of accomplishments Governor Greg Abbott read off at the convention, there are groups within the state GOP worried about the day when the party will look more like the Avengers at the end of the Infinity War, when, spoiler alert, half of them are gone. Here's outgoing party vice chairman Amy Clark speaking Thursday.
We have to bring more people into this party. We cannot continue to keep the state red if the only Republicans in Texas are the Republicans right here.
Sure, that doesn't sound like desperation, but it was a warning that the party can't keep doing the same thing and expect the same results. And you've heard that argument in bits and pieces all around the convention. Here's Delegate Ashley Swoboda during the public comments during discussion of the party platform plank that condemns homosexual behavior.
This kind of language makes no sense to young people, the people that we're trying to appeal to. Even if this language is kept, I can assure you that my generation will change it in due time. If not, the Republican Party will not grow, and we'll only lose ground in the future.
And here's Delegate Tamo Muniz, Texas chairman of the Federation of Hispanic Republicans.
I think there are a lot of people here in the Republican Party that maybe believe that you don't need the Hispanic vote to win, and it's tough to overcome that mentality.
Muniz has been a very vocal advocate of Hispanic outreach in the party, both in Texas and nationally. In 2016, he worried hardline immigration talk from then-candidate Donald Trump would end up shrinking Hispanic support in the party. But of course, if a majority of Republican delegates agreed with Muniz and Swoboda, then the party would have pushed for changes during the convention. For the most part, that didn't happen. There's still a party plank on homosexuality because some delegates feel the same way Craig Licardi does.
The Republicans were conservatives. We conserve. We protect from destruction that which is true. And it's a travesty that we would have the gall to ignore God and that we would exclude him from our platform.
And Muniz says there's still little effort to connect with the Hispanic community, a decline he's seen that began after former Governor Rick Perry came out against a controversial immigration bill passed in Arizona a few years back.
Rick Perry stood up and said, not in Texas, and that was huge. Now we have SB4, and it's hard to help people understand how much effect that's going to have down the road.
But he still hopes that Republicans can attract Hispanic voters heading into the November elections. He says the looming immigration vote in the U.S. House could really help. He says if the party gets a bill to the president's desk, it could be a big boost.
Now, if it doesn't pass, then I think the president will have, as the president, he will have to take responsibility that this, you know, this is something that was the Republican Party did. If it doesn't pass.
Today, during a live interview with Fox News, President Trump said he, quote, certainly wouldn't sign a more moderate compromise bill on DACA and immigration. The comments threatened to derail a planned vote next week. But this afternoon, the Washington Post quotes a White House official saying Trump misunderstood the question he was asked on Fox this morning and that he would support the bill. Ben Philpott, KUT News, San Antonio.
Texas has the highest rate of people without health insurance in the country. And the next person we're going to talk to is putting a lot of time and energy trying to enact proposals to address that, despite facing a pretty uphill battle, being a Democrat running for statewide office in Texas. Candidate for Lieutenant Governor Mike Collier, thanks for coming to KUT.
Thank you.
So almost 9% of people in Texas have no health insurance, highest rate in the country. What's your proposal to fix that?
Well, I think there's two things that we need to do. First of all, we need to expand Medicaid. I like to think of it as closing the coverage gap because we can design that system however we like. But there's 1 million or 2 million people that would benefit from this, and the federal government would pay for it. And the fact that we aren't doing it strikes me as fiscally really stupid. And I'm a CPA, and that's where I'm coming from. And then also, just getting healthy Texans to sign up to get covered. The rate is declining. There are about 8% fewer Texans signed up in 2018 versus 17. The rate is continuing to decline. It's because the federal government is no longer spending in terms of public awareness or facilitating sign up on the exchange. That's really bad for everybody. So we need to do those two things, expand Medicaid and then have our own program to get Texans to sign up for insurance.
Republicans who oppose Medicaid expansion argue that the trajectory of Medicaid overall is not sustainable. More than $500 billion a year out of the federal budget and growing, and that they say expanding would make it worse.
It's a great program. The federal government will pay 90% of the cost. Texas will pay 10% of this cost. That's roughly $1 billion for us, $9 billion from the federal government. And for every dollar that we spend, we get back more than a dollar in tax revenues. So it's a very, very good deal for Texas. This concern that it might go away, that concern is no longer there. I mean, the Republicans in Washington tried to take it away. They didn't because Texans want it. They want it very badly. And we've been sitting around. We've lost $40 billion into the state, wasting time sitting around thinking about it. It's time to act.
There may be a lot of people listening to you right now who agree with you, but maybe doubt your ability to win statewide office. No Democrat has been elected to statewide office since 1994. In the last election, the Republican Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick beat Democrat Leticia Vandepute by almost 20 points. It was like 58% to 39. How are you as a Democrat going to win statewide office? You do face tremendous odds. You must acknowledge that.
Well, it's been 25 years since one of us won, but people are really unhappy. Let's talk about what they're unhappy about, and let's talk about what Dan Patrick has done or not done. They're very, very unhappy about school funding. I mean, school funding is a disaster. Property taxes, as we've discussed, they're very unhappy about. Access to health care, people are very, very unhappy about that. Look at school safety. All right. So we've had a disaster that we've dealt with, and it's come to our state. Sadly, it's come to our state. What are they doing about it? They aren't doing anything about it. Look at mental health. What has he done in terms of mental health? And what do you get for his not doing anything? You get higher taxes. I don't see how Texans will reelect him for that.
You brought up a number of topics there. I want to address one specifically, which is education funding. How do you grow the overall pool of money for schools?
So there's one thing that must be done immediately. It's the only thing that I pledged to do tax-wise in my first term as lieutenant governor, and there is a loophole in the property tax system. Homeowners are overpaying, small businesses are overpaying, and the owners of large commercial and industrial properties are underpaying their taxes to the tune of $5 billion a year. You know, the Constitution says that you must pay based on market value. If you own a home, you're paying based on market value. That's one of the reasons why taxes are going up, because market values are going up. If you own a home and you're paying taxes on market value, then Valero must pay taxes on the market value of its assets. And they aren't. They're cheating the system. And there's $5 billion a year missing. So the first order of business is to close that loophole. And that is the power of the lieutenant governor.
But even then, it's only $5 billion. I mean, I say only $5 billion. It's obviously a lot of money. But Texas spends almost $60 billion a year on public education, not including the local property tax dollars. Is $5 billion enough to fix all the problems with education funding in Texas?
It's a great start. It's a great start. It will go a long way.
What about a statewide income tax?
No, absolutely not. No. We should take it one step at a time. When we close that loophole, that will be a tectonic shift in terms of how we deal with state fiscal policy. And the other thing I hasten to say is closing that loophole is not raising taxes. It's merely enforcing the law, and it must be done.
But it will still take resources away from businesses that might have used that money to pay someone's salary or invest.
Well, let's talk about that. So big corporations are going to have to put in more money. There's no question about it. They own these properties. They're underpaying their taxes. The other side will say that's not good for job creation, and they don't know what they're talking about. I come from the big corporate world. You know, I was a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers for a long time, and they have it exactly backwards, Nathan, because what they're doing is taking tax dollars and handing it off to the Fortune 500, the owners of which don't even live in the state.
How much of that $5 billion comes from Fortune 500 companies, though?
Quite a lot. I can't tell you. I haven't tried to do the math.
All right.
But if you think about who owns these large commercial industrial properties, it's the large corporations, mostly.
Let me ask you really quickly about school safety and gun regulations, because you implied the state legislature's not really doing much. The Republican leadership is not leading on this issue.
That's right.
Would you like to see stricter gun regulations in Texas?
Well, I think we need to do two things for school safety. The answer to that is yes, and I'll come to that. We need to do two things. We all know what we need to do. One is we need to allocate more resources so that we have more counselors, trained professionals. We've starved our schools. We've created a dangerous situation, and so we need to allocate more resources. I've called for a special session to do that before the start of the next school year. They're delaying. They aren't doing that. So
Governor
one is
Abbott,
resources.
Governor Abbott's plan does include a call for more mental health resources.
Well, and he's allocated $110 million that he's found from federal money. He's going to add $30 million in the next legislative session. That's $140 million. There's 8,800 schools in the state. You divide that $140 million by 8,000, you don't get enough to hire a single counselor. You get a third of a counselor per school. It is a meaningless gesture designed to delay, I'm sorry to say. It's going to take more money than that so that we have safe schools. And we also must begin to address guns. And the vast majority of Texans agree with me is that we need to do two things. One, background checks that work, and two, red flag laws. And red flag laws are very simply, you know, there's already a process in place so that if you've been convicted of a crime involving a gun or domestic abuse, or if you've had mental illness, there's plenty of reasons why following due process, you have to yield your weapons, right? So what red flag law is all about is a means of accelerating that, going through a court, making sure that you follow due process. If you think that there's somebody out there that you're worried they could hurt themselves or they can hurt others, a process in place through the court system so that you can act quickly and temporarily and see if you have a problem on your hands. Those two things.
Well, let me ask you about background checks. You said background checks that work. Do you mean to require background checks for private gun sales?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think there's loopholes everywhere. And there's a number of different ways that you can achieve this. For example, if you want to sell your gun to somebody, if they have a license to carry, well, that's probably a pretty good in terms of a background check, right? If you have a gun and you want to sell it to somebody and you don't know anything about them, you haven't done your due diligence, then you ought to remain liable for what happens with that gun. And if you don't want to remain liable for what happens with that gun, then take it through a dealer or have a background check run or don't sell it, but take responsibility. I mean, the Second Amendment gives us the right to have arms, right? That's a right. That's a wonderful right. We must protect that right. Democrats want to protect that right. But with that right comes a responsibility. It's as simple as that.
You don't want to touch assault weapons or magazines or anything like that.
Well, we should talk about magazines. We should talk about magazines. I mean, law enforcement says that these rapidly repeating rifles, they say what turns those into real dangers is the magazine capacity. So we really should have a conversation.
When you say rapidly repeating, do you mean semi-auto or do you mean—
Semi-automatic that you can squeeze off round after round after round very rapidly. What law enforcement
Weapons or modern sporting rifles, whatever you want to call them.
What law enforcement will tell you is that if it repeats very rapidly and you have a very, very large magazine, you have created a problem that's almost impossible to solve. And I think we should first have a conversation around magazine capacity.
What is the correct capacity?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have that kind of technical point of view. I can just say from my travels around the state, and I talk to as many Republicans as I do independents, as I do Democrats, the vast majority of Texans say, look, that's the kind of sensible gun policy we should be talking about.
Mike Collier is the Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor of Texas. Mr. Collier, thanks for your time.
Sir. Thank you, Nathan. It was a pleasure.
The state of Texas has one of the worst HPV vaccination rates in the country. That's the human papillomavirus, which has been linked to several cancers. Only a third of Texas kids are getting vaccinated. KUT's Ashley Lopez reports cancer prevention and healthcare advocates are starting a public education campaign across the state to try to help fix that.
Jamie Wasilowski was diagnosed with stage 4 throat cancer about 11 years ago. He says his doctors were almost certain it was caused by HPV. That's why Wasilowski, now the president and CEO of Methodist Healthcare, says it's disheartening to see that so few Texans are doing what they can to prevent their children from getting HPV.
So, you know, I'm very, very proud to live in Texas. I think we are the greatest state in the country. We do so many things so well. But I have to tell you, for this particular issue, I'm ashamed. I mean, we are 47th out of 50 states.
That's why the American Cancer Society, the Texas Medical Association, and the University of Texas System are launching a public education campaign. They say misinformation about the vaccine is the biggest driver behind that low rate. And Dr. Kimberly Avila Edwards, a pediatrician with Austin Regional Clinic, says complicating the issue is the way pediatricians talk to parents about the vaccine.
We can say you need the diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, meningitis, and if you want the HPV vaccine, which is messaging and misinformation.
Dr. Avila says she doesn't say that. She tells parents these are the three vaccines, and then she answers questions if they have any.
Fear is really what drives concern, and I appreciate that because parents want the best for their children in most circumstances, and to be able to lay those fears and take those 2 minutes to answer questions, I think, is invaluable.
Groups say the goal is to replicate that communication between parents and doctors about the vaccine across the state. Jamie Wasilowski with Methodist Healthcare says he also wants to work with Texas legislators to introduce a bill that would improve public education and require strong recommendations from physicians. Wasilowski also wants lawmakers to pass a mandate requiring the vaccine, but acknowledges that will be a challenge in Texas.
I would love to take that challenge and partner with somebody as a mandate, because I really do believe it should be, like I said, but I think we need to start somewhere.
In 2007, then-Governor Rick Perry issued an executive order mandating young girls get the HPV vaccine. However, the Texas legislature blocked that order. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
The Texas Supreme Court is expected to rule soon in a case that could spell the end of single-use plastic bag bans in Austin and other Texas cities. As KUT's Mose Bushell reports, plastic contamination is a problem that's lately earned international attention. But the court will likely focus on the meaning of three little words.
Those words are solid waste management. Texas law says that local governments may not prohibit or restrict, for solid waste management purposes, the sale or use of a container or package in a manner not authorized by state law. Opponents cited that language in a lawsuit arguing that local rules prohibiting single-use plastic bags at grocery stores are illegal. That case, Laredo Merchants Association versus the City of Laredo, is what's now under consideration by the state Supreme Court. George Kellerman is president of the Texas Retailers Association, a group that opposes bag bans.
The potential for a patchwork of municipalities and ordinances to be kind of scattered throughout the state is very onerous on businesses.
But cities argue they have good reason to regulate bags and that solid waste management has nothing to do with it.
The town of Fort Stockton is a pretty conservative community, but the plastic bags were getting in the cattle feeders and choking the cows.
Bennett Sandlin heads the Texas Municipal League. He says far from Fort Stockton, South Padre Island also passed a single-use bag ban.
The reason they did it was because the bags were getting in the surf, damaging marine wildlife, which is bad in and of itself, but it also hurt tourism.
Sandlin hopes the court will affirm cities' rights to make these rules, but it could also decide to end all local bag ordinances, or it could fall somewhere in the middle, allowing cities to keep rules that fall outside the court's interpretation of solid waste management.
If the case doesn't go our way, it's going to be important that other cities look at the purpose of their ordinance.
As with many battles over regulation in Texas, the bag debate is being fought in terms of state versus local control. But new understanding of the harmful consequences of plastics are prompting global calls for action. Pamela Plotkin directs the Texas Sea Grant for Texas A&M University. She says plastic bags are the most common thing she finds in the stomachs of sea turtles she studies.
And I think that everybody just realizes there's so much out in the environment now that it's astounding. You really can't go to any beach without finding plastic.
At a meeting of the leaders of the world's largest economies earlier this month, five member countries pledged to reduce global plastic pollution. Japan and the U.S. were the only two in the group that did not sign the pact. Mose Bushell, KUT News.
pretty hot weekend in Austin. Might get some rain, but hey, it's June in Austin. What do you expect? It's going to be hot. What if you want to jump in the water to cool off? There's definitely one place in Austin you cannot do it. KUT's Matt Largy has that story for our AT Explained project.
Sean Mahan has a problem.
So that water looks pretty good right now, huh?
It's very refreshing looking.
Sean and I are standing at the edge of Lady Bird Lake. It's hot, like really hot. And he wants to know.
I was wondering why I can't swim in this body of water.
He's not the only one.
Why is swimming prohibited in Lady Bird Lake?
Why can't we swim in Town Lake? Or, I'm sorry, Lady Bird Lake.
That was Tim Nolan and Eva McCleary. They all asked the same question for AT Explained. We've gotten this question a bunch in the last month or so. They've all heard rumors about why.
I've heard that it's illegal to swim in Lady Bird Lake because it's so polluted from the runoff from the streets.
There are probably rip currents and maybe undertows in the water here that would make swimming dangerous.
I believe that since we're downstream of the water treatment facility, it was probably in the public interest.
These would be good reasons, but actually the water in the lake is not that polluted, and the currents on a normal day are not that strong.
Now, are you sure that you can't swim in here?
No, I am not sure. I've never seen any signs, and my wife always asks me, well, why can't they swim? I just say, well, they just can't swim. It's just prohibited.
So, for the record, it is prohibited by city ordinance. The ordinance says, quote, a person may not swim in Town Lake. Yes, the ordinance still has the old name. It was renamed Lady Bird Lake in 2007. There are a couple of exceptions to the law. If you're a city employee performing an official duty, that's okay. If you're trying to save someone, that's okay too. If you're doing permitted construction work, or if you're participating in a permitted event, that's okay too. That's why swimmers in the triathlon compete in the lake. Otherwise, it's banned. Still, every year, people drown in the lake.
We do begin with a developing story. Right now, authorities are searching Lady Bird Lake for the body of a missing man.
Divers from the Austin Police Department searched a couple of hours before the body of the man was pulled out of the water.
Dive teams in Lady Bird Lake searching for a paddleboarder who disappeared in the water.
Clearly, the ban has not stopped accidental drownings. But then, where did the ban come from? For that, we've got to go back more than 50 years. In the late 50s and early 60s, there were 22 drownings in Town Lake. But there was one incident that changed things. It was Mother's Day, May 10th, 1964. A reporter for the Austin Statesman wrote it up at the time.
Newcomers to Austin, the Ollie Rendon family joined the increasing throngs that crowd the Town Lake shoreline on Sundays.
Two of the Rendon kids waded out into the water. Inez, 11 years old, Cynthia, 8 years old.
Rendon told Detective Lieutenant Leonard Flores he was watching as the younger girl, Cynthia, waded some 5 feet from the bank into water more than 20 feet deep.
As they waded out, the bank dropped off suddenly, and they were in way over their heads.
Inez, already in the water, answered her younger sister's screams as the father plunged into the water to help. Inez was pulled into the deep water, struggling to rescue Cynthia. The father, unable to swim, briefly grasped one of the girls by the hand but lost his hold when he, too, went off into deep water.
Two weeks after Inez and Cynthia died, the Austin City Council met. They were there to vote on an emergency proposal to ban swimming, wading, bathing, or otherwise willfully going into Town Lake. It passed on a vote of 3-2, and it's been that way ever since.
So I gotta tell you, this water looks pretty tempting to jump into.
Yeah, it does. It looks refreshing.
I've been in it myself before. If we get a little too hot, it's not uncommon for us to get in the water, too.
This is Corporal Steve Shire from APD's Lake Patrol Unit. We're out on a boat with him and fellow Lake Patrol Officer Dave Billens.
So can you tell us where we're going right now?
Yeah, we are on Lady Bird Lake. Mopac is behind us, and we're heading up here towards Lamar and Congress and First Avenue up here.
I wanted to see firsthand what enforcing the swimming ban looks like.
How often do you encounter swimmers down here?
Usually every time I'm out here on the lake, you'll see people in the water, not necessarily swimming, but it's hot. We understand that. It's 100 degrees some days. People get in the water to cool off or they flip over on their kayak. So it kind of goes with the territory.
We cruise toward downtown. As we pass under the Lamar Bridge, there are some signs that say no swimming or diving, and it seems like people are generally obeying the swimming ban.
In the 8 summers I've been out here, I actually saw one person had a swim cap on. They were going right down the middle of the lake on a busy weekend day, and then we just asked him to get out of the water and explain the city ordinance to him, and he got out of the water.
The only other time we encounter them swimming is when they jump off the bridge, illegally jump from the bridge, and then they have to swim back to shore or swim back to the bridge.
And that, jumping off one of the bridges, is super dangerous and illegal. You see, there's a bunch of garbage at the bottom of the lake, debris from old bridges and dams. Every once in a while, someone jumps and ends up getting impaled on a piece of old rebar hidden under the water.
That's the big thing with this water. You can only see, you know, a foot down into it, so there's no idea. I mean, no one knows what's 3 foot under, 4 foot under, how shallow you are.
This lake used to be a river. They dammed it up to make the lake, and along the banks, the depths of the water can change drastically, like that 20-foot drop-off where the Rendon girls died 50 years ago.
Try to get this flat-bottom boat turned around.
We cruise over to where Barton Creek empties into Lady Bird Lake. It's crowded with kayaks and canoes and paddleboards. Up ahead of us, on the pedestrian bridge that goes over the creek, the one that's part of the hike and bike trail, a guy climbs up on the railing.
That guy right here is about to do it right in front of us.
Yeah, you're not supposed to swim here. See, there's somebody who just took a dive. Now, if we can ID him when we get out, we can give him a ticket. But, and like I said, mostly it's kids just having fun, but it's nonstop. You land in the wrong spot.
The guy who jumped off the bridge swims to shore and disappears. His friends up on the bridge look like they've seen the police boat, and they run away too. And that's the hard part of enforcing these ordinances.
They see us coming a mile away, so. But that's why we got to come out here every day. They know that we're here, and there's signs posted that you're not supposed to do it, but it's a safety thing.
It is quite spongy, isn't it?
It's a little macrobiotic.
Yeah. We're back now with one of our question askers, Sean Mahan. And yeah, we know the law, but we've stepped into a shallow part of the lake, just up to our knees, and it is refreshing.
I am so glad. I'm so glad I have you here to blame for me getting in this water again.
Swimming, I wish I was swimming. I wish I was swimming. I wish I was. I wish I was.
Refreshing, yes, but get too far out, and it definitely could be dangerous. Maybe someday we'll be able to swim in Austin's crown jewel again, if they can make it safe. Matt Largy, KUT News.
Bring the mask and snorkel. Bring the flippers also. Bring the frisbee, baby. Bring something to drink.
We have more of these stories at atexplained.org, and you can subscribe to the AT Explained podcast there or ask your own question. It might be the next one we answer. That's atexplained.org. ATXPLAINED.org.
We could try. I'll do the cannonball. If you do your swan dive.
That is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of June 2018. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org, or you can ask me on Twitter. I'm @KUTNathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org.